What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything. You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Welcome to Movie Crush, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Movie Crush, Friday interview edition with Justin McElroy, one of the McElroy brothers. And if you're a fan of podcasting, that's probably all I need to say. But if you don't know the McElroy brothers, I'm talking about Justin, the eldest, Travis McElroy, who's right there in the middle, and then little baby brother Griffin. Griffin's been on the show. You remember him from Groundhog Day, kind of early on in Movie Crush. And these guys are great. They're friends of mine. They do My Brother and Me. They do The Adventure Zone. Justin and his lovely, wonderful wife, Sydney, who is a medical doctor, do Sawbones, which is a great podcast about kind of weird medical history. It's the family business. They do Adventure Zone with their dad, who's also a great guy. I've had dinner with him once. And they're good dudes. I met them through, like I've met so many people at Max Fun Con through the Max Fun Network with my buddy Jesse Thorne. So many great things have come my way because of that. And we hung out at Max Fun Con quite a few times. They've been there a few times with me, sometimes with the wives, sometimes without. And I've gotten to know their families, and I just couldn't speak more highly of Justin and the gang. They're good people, and they do great work. My Brother and Me is a, dare I say, a legendary comedy podcast at this point, here at 10 years in. And they got a great following. Check it out. It's technically an advice show, but it's really much more than that. It's just good comedy from three very, very funny brothers. And here we go. His pick was With Nail and I, the 1987 comedy, indie comedy out of England, from writer and director Bruce Robinson. If you haven't seen this movie, and I say this in the episode, you can stream it, I believe, only on the Criterion channel, which you can get a 2-week free trial of and then cancel if you want. But I would keep it because Criterion does great stuff. But if you haven't seen With Nail and I, please, please seek it out. It is great in every way. One of my favorite movies. And this was Justin's pick. So here we go with the great Justin McElroy on With Nail and I. How you doing?
Yeah, good.
You look well.
Well, thanks. I feel well. I feel great. What couldn't be better?
Is everyone healthy? How are the kids? How's Sydney? How's the
family? One of the kids got okay. Is this the show? Or are we just talking?
This is the show. This is going to be.
I never felt like the show. It felt like Show Chuck. You know what I mean?
This is
very different. It's very different vibe. You don't get so inquisitive.
Yeah,
regular Chuck doesn't remember that I have children.
Oh, he's like, shut it.
Show Chuck is like all dadly. No. So, okay, this is really weird, but one of the kids, the little one, Cooper, she's two, and she started throwing up. And it's like, wait, like, how? I mean, that's been the wildest thing about when you have two kids, like, or any kids, I guess, they're just sick constantly. It's like every month they're just sick. But they haven't been getting sick. It's like, there's no germs.
Right.
To get them, right? So they haven't been getting sick. So how'd she get sick? And we start looking around, kid had a tick on her.
And no
then,
way.
So we think, yeah, so we think she got some sort of weird, like, tick-borne illness, like Rocky Mountain spotted fever or something wild like that.
Wow.
Now, that claimed, like, a half of my brother's peripheral vision. Griffin
really?
Had that when he was a kid, and he lost some sight in his eye. So we were pretty worried about it. So we started treating her right away, and we got to indulge. This kid hates taking medicine so much that I have started to wonder, like, maybe she should just go a little bit blind. You know what I mean? Like, maybe just a little bit of vision loss, and then we would be like, okay, well, I guess nature takes its course. No, it's a serious illness, and of course I won't, but it's a struggle.
Man.
Other than that, you know, they're fine. They're going, like, pretty buck wild, I would say, like, just staying at home constantly,
yeah.
constantly asking us if they can go, like, to the playground or to Great Wolf Lodge or Disney World or any
right.
of that.
It's all, like, the bad places.
All the bad places you can't go. So they're pretty stir crazy. But other than that, you know, we're all hanging in there.
What's
How are you?
I'm good, man. We're fine. We're healthy. No one's gotten COVID yet, although quite a few people in my circle have, and that's always a little scary. But yeah, we're fine. I mean, I think, like everyone, we sort of settled into things.
Yeah.
And this is the new normal for now. We're trying to figure out school, like all parents are. What are you guys doing? Do you know?
No, I haven't really decided. We're still waiting to see kind of what the plan
right.
for the local school board is going to be, to see what they, because Charlie was in pre-K last year and would be going into kindergarten now.
Yeah, same with Ruby. So
we're just now in that area where, like, if you don't send your kids to school, the government's like, you do have to send them to school. You actually do have to do that. So we're got to figure out something. So,
oh, even for kindergarten, is that like a, that counts as?
It's like counts as like attendance and, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I think what we're looking at right now is a potentially doing a little micro school with her and four other families, maybe.
Like a school for ants.
Yeah, a tiny
it's from
little
a movie called Zoolander, as long as we're talking about films. So bright in here, Chuck. Hold on.
Oh, there he goes. He's bringing in the mood lighting. Very nice.
Yeah, it's intimate.
Oh, wow. Justin After Dark.
Yeah.
You know what? I was just thinking today of when you and Sydney and Charlie came to town. This is before Cooper, and we all went to the zoo. And on the way into
great
the
zoo down there.
It's a good zoo. But I made the joke. I was like, you know, if we recorded this zoo outing, we could probably release it as a podcast and make $10,000.
Easy. Casper would sponsor that. No
sure.
problem.
Just like a one-off McElroy and Bryant zoo outing. It's a hot ticket.
Well, now we'll get our $10,000. Because advertisers are like, so excited to spend money right now. They're just going wild with the stuff.
Yeah.
just spreading it out. But like making it rain like Master P in the club. Just like dumping out buckets of cash.
How are things with the brothers? I haven't checked in with those guys lately. You know, I had Griffin on the show.
They're
a long
good.
Time ago.
Like we have seen Travis and Teresa we saw once after we had all like I mean we've all been you know quarantining and we were all healthy so we did do that at
That's
one
good.
Point Griff I have not seen since you know they're doing fine. Griffin keeps like taking on projects around his house. He lives in Austin. He got really mad about the bamboo around his house. So apparently he bought a chainsaw and just started cutting down bamboo and throwing it into a wood chipper. Like that's how he's spending his time.
Yeah.
It sucks, man. Like we had a pretty good rhythm there because we were touring like once a month.
Yeah.
For a weekend and our kids were hanging out. We were getting to hang out.
Totally.
And, you know, it's just sort of, and it's by no means the, the worst, not even the top 1 million of worst things about COVID, but like,
oh, sure, I know.
It's been a bummer for not getting to see each other. I mean, business things aside, because that was like a pretty, when it first happened, we were like, we had shows booked basically for the rest of the year. We had our whole tour lined up. And when it first happened, we were all like, well, hate to do it, but I think we're going to have to cancel these shows in late March. Yeah. And you know what? Maybe I'm a little worried about the ones in early April. Late April will be fine. Right. But like early April, I'm pretty worried about.
Yeah.
Now it's like, well, see everybody in 2021.
Yeah, maybe.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I don't know.
That'll be the last thing, you know, is big events like that.
Yeah.
Unless it's a fucking Trump rally.
And we are in no rush to be the vanguard of that. No. As much as we miss each other and our fans, like, we are in no rush to be the first on the scene there.
No, I mean, who would want to have the responsibility of bringing, you know, a couple of thousand people together in a room and having 2% of those people get sick?
Well, with our listeners, they nasty, so yeah. It's going to be 20 to 30 to 40%. I mean, it will be a bloodbath.
Speaking of at-home projects, I want to talk a little bit about your woodworking.
Oh, thank God. Finally, something I really care about.
Dude, when did you learn to do this stuff? Have you always had these skills? Or tell everyone what you've been doing.
I've had a woodworking has been my lifelong obsession since late May. I got, as Sydney said, she wanted to get into gardening. She wanted a garden box, because, like an elevated garden box, because our dirt here is bad.
Yeah.
It's bad dirt. Didn't know till I became a homeowner, you could have bad dirt and good dirt.
Yeah,
we have bad dirt that doesn't do anything. So she was like, I want a garden box. I was like, well, I'll buy on Amazon, get you a garden box real quick. And I'm looking, and it's like, There's nothing that was how we wanted. And she said, let the record show. She said, I bet you could maybe build one. And I was like, yeah, right. It's made out of wood. There's absolutely no way. And then I went and got, I started looking up stuff and I was like, okay, I could do this. I could get like, I got a circular saw and I got some plywood or some boards and went to go make this garden box. And I made this garden box. It's like 8 foot by 8 foot and it looks like crap and it's terrible. And as I was looking at it, I was like, this is all I care about. This is all I want to do. There's just something about, I have been someone who has been working in words, in ephemeral content since I was 15 years old, been writing on the internet. So I'm either writing on the internet or talking into the internet. All very ephemeral stuff. And then seeing something that I had made, like physically made.
Yeah.
Just especially in these times when like progress on things seems to be so hard to come by. It just like, I was basically high off of it. Like the idea of like making something and seeing it. And so I just got really obsessed. There's a guy, Steve Ramsey, does a course called The Weekend Woodworker, and it's basically like a project a week kind of deal. So I've been chucking my way through those, in addition to like other projects that I've wanted. Like we wanted a table for this banquet that we have.
Dude, the table looks so good.
Thank you. I was like very intimidated to make it. It's an interesting thing about woodworking though. Is like I made that in the same week as I made a paper tray for my father-in-law. And the paper tray was so much harder.
Yeah.
And no one appreciates that. They look at a big thing and they're like, whoa, that's big. That must've been really hard.
Yeah.
That's not hard. There's lots of places to hide your screw ups there. Like I can mess up there all day and just put a little, fix on it. It's harder to do the smaller stuff. It's also fun as I've been using these for like gifts for people, because like I don't want to keep all this wood stuff around my house that I make,
right?
So I like have given
fire hazard
people. Yeah, right. What I've learned is that there's no, when you make something yourself like that, there is no reaction that you can get from the recipient that will begin to fill the labor gap,
right?
Of like time, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I handed it to my father-in-law, who was not expecting it. And to his credit, he was like, oh, thanks. That's really nice of you to do. And I'm like, sit down. Let me show you this hand stippling.
Yeah.
This took me 3 hours.
Uh-huh.
I gave myself carpal tunnel syndrome. I have to sleep in a brace. Let me walk you through all the different miter cuts I made. Look at this one.
Yeah.
Look how clean these angles are. 320 grit sandpaper. I did. Thank you for noticing.
Dude, we are the same person. I got into woodworking probably like 10 years ago with just sort of big. I'm decent at big chunky things because, like you said, it's a lot easier. So I built some tables. I built like potters and planters benches and just little things here and there. Never any kind of fine woodworking at all. But I cannot just say, here, Emily, I'm done. There has to be a big fucking presentation.
Oh, yeah. I have literally, Chuck, went and like hidden stuff when I know she's going to be downstairs where my workshop is.
Uh-huh.
I'll like go hide stuff in the workshop so she doesn't see it before it's like ready. And then she is always like, what do you want me to do? Like I built a yellow patio table that looks like I kind of bought it at Walmart for $30.
Right.
And I built him like, dun, da, da, da. Yeah. What do you think? Yeah. It's yellow.
We're the HGTV generation. It's all about the reveal.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh man, that's great. Maybe I'll, with your permission, I'll throw a couple of your pieces up on my Instagram.
Please,
when this goes out, so people know what the hell we're talking about. How are all the shows doing? And for the benefit of the listener, that I mean, like the two or three people that don't know who you are, you're
so flattering.
You're one of the three McElroy brothers, mm-hmm. along with Griffin
that we know of.
Well, that's true. Along with Griffin, who did Groundhog Day. Very early on, Travis has not been on yet. And I was waiting to see all you guys in person, but now it's just, this is what's going on. So I figured why not?
Yeah.
And you guys have my brother, and me. You have Adventure Zone. You and your wife, Sydney, who is a medical doctor, have Sawbones.
Mm-hmm.
Just tell everyone a little bit about all those so they can go find you.
That's basic. I mean, those are the three biggest ones that we make. The My Brother, Me is an advice show. Sort of a bad advice show that we've been doing for 10 years now. It's sort of like our, I guess if you want to say flagship product.
Yeah, for sure.
It's basically just the three of us sitting around telling boner jokes about ghosts.
Yeah, it's the best.
Thank you. The Adventure Zone is a actual play, role-playing podcast we do with our dad.
Uh-huh, who was great.
Thank you. I don't know why I thanked you. I have nothing to do with my dad being great. We've shaved a lot of rough edges off.
Sure.
Not to get too deep in the woodworking slang. But,
you prop them up a little.
The Adventure Zone we turned into a – so My Brother, Me, we did a 6-episode – I'm going to call it a mini-series on the now-failed comedy streaming service CISO that NBC tried to get going. The Adventure Zone we turned into a graphic novel – series that releases like the newest one of those is coming out, is the third one is coming out in here in like July 13th, I think. A board game and stuff like that. And then Sawbones is a medical history show that I do with my wife, who's a physician, and she's one, very smart, and two, like, is really into medical history stuff, like weird medical history, leeches, and
it's really
stuff
cool
like that. So every week we take a new, very much inspired, as so many of us are, I think, by the Stuff You Should Know format.
Thanks, man.
Take a topic and do a deep dive on it with her sort of educating me on it. And we did a book based on that show in October, I think, 2018.
That's right. That looked terrific.
Yeah, thank you. I was proud of how it came out.
Well, Sydney's got a show.
And then we do some
too,
other
right?
smaller stuff. I do The Empty Bowl, which is a meditative cereal podcast with my friend Dan Gubert, who runs a cereal website called cerealously.net. I do us and the guys who run The Worst Idea of All Time do an annual Paul Blart Mall Cop 2 reviewed cast.
I need to hear that.
Till Death Do Us Blart.
Is it great?
It's so fun to do. It's actually weird to have something that releases annually. Because it's just like we have to keep the premise of the show is, in addition to this recording of it, we have each picked successors who, in the event of one of our deaths, will take our place in the show.
Okay.
So it is the world's very first eternal podcast.
Who's
so
your
we've
successor?
Set that up. Who is my? Oh, it's my daughter.
Okay.
Charlie.
All right.
So
well,
she has time. Travis is Stuart Wellington from the Flop House, who frequently sends Travis like emergency and different immunoboosting drugs just to keep him alive.
That's funny.
And I think that we used to do one called The McElroy Brothers Will Be in Trolls World Tour.
And then you were.
And then we were, so we don't have to do that podcast anymore because we were in the movie Trolls World Tour, so that's
that
over.
That is so funny. I mean, and that literally came about because you guys did that show, right?
Yeah. It was very much a visualization, you know, the secret law of attraction, ask the universe and let the universe provide.
Uh-huh. Is there going to be a follow-up? What's your next thing you want to try and materialize?
We haven't put the time into it. We tried to get on the Tonight Show. That'd probably be a lot easier now, wouldn't it? On the Tonight Show for a while. It never really worked out. And I don't know. We're busy with actual like stuff weirdly at this point. We don't have as many like pie in the sky, and it's mainly about like, we can make our own podcast. We can't get into TV and movies, but nobody's making those anymore. So
right.
We're trying, you know, it's tough, but
we have the last laugh because we can just be in our basement and do our thing.
Yes.
So suck
as
it.
I have been for the better part of 15 years.
Well, I'm finally in the basement. You know, Josh and I have been recording remotely during this whole time. I do Movie Crush down here, but I actually have been going into the office, my completely empty office, to do Stuff You Should Know, just because I've had a couple of audio issues here in the basement, and for Movie Crush, it's passable, but, you know, Stuff You Should Know, you gotta keep that shit.
Is it like soundproofing kind of issues, or just like?
No, we lost one episode because of the unit that I was recording into had a hardware failure, and then the last couple of shows have had some like crackling. And I think I had like a bad mic cable, but I don't know that because I'm not listening to it live.
Right. Yeah.
But Stuff You Should Know, you can't fuck around like that. You got to make that shit sound perfect.
That's professional.
That's right. Well, I'm glad everything is cruising along with you guys. I figured everyone was doing well, but.
Yeah, we're hanging in there.
It's good to see you, man.
Good to see you too, Chuck. Well, this has been great.
All right.
And let me know if you ever want me to be on your podcast, Movie Crush.
This is Ashley Iaconetti from the Ben and Ashley I Almost Famous podcast. Tennessee just sounds perfect. Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure. To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
You've probably heard a lot about electrified vehicles lately. Well, Toyota has electrified options for every lifestyle. We've got hybrids, no plug needed.
All right, let's go.
But we also have plug-in hybrids, if that's your thing. You can even go 100% electric in the Toyota BZ4X. With so many options for reducing carbon emissions, Toyota is electrified, diversified. Learn more about our Beyond Zero vision for the future at toyota.com/beyondzero.
So let's dive into With Nail. Well, actually, before we dive into that, I want to talk a little bit about movies in your youth. I talked to Griffin about sort of what it was like growing up in the McElroy household movie-wise. And that was so long ago, though. I think people would love to hear a little bit about just sort of the culture that was coming your way and where it was coming from and that kind of thing.
I mean, it was very much dictated by our dad, I think. Our dad was like an old school, like one of those real like comedy fans, uh-huh. You know what I mean? Like he was a morning DJ for 40 years who did a lot of like all comedy work there. But like dad was the one who got us deep into like Kids in the Hall and Mel Brooks and MST3K and stuff like that. So there was a lot of like old like Marx Brothers and, you know, that sort of vibe. As much as we would tolerate in our young age, you know, we didn't appreciate things that didn't have a lot of fart jokes in them back then.
Well, Mel Brooks.
But then like, right, exactly. And then like, I don't know, we would get fixated on bad movies sometimes that we would just rewatch. Not bad, but just like, there's this movie Meet the Deedles about two brothers that were park rangers.
I know
one
that
of
movie.
Them was like, yeah. We would watch that 100 times, watch The Stupids starring Tom Arnold like a bajillion times. And I don't know why. There would just be certain movies that like delighted us and we would watch. I know Griffin and Travis watched Kung Pao Enter the Fist like, I mean, literally 100 times in our youth. And I think that like rewatching stuff was a big thing. We weren't allowed to see R-rated movies until we were adults.
Okay.
So like there was very little sort of like horror or, I mean, one time I was at a kid's sleepover and they were watching, I'll never forget, Sleepaway Camp 3, I want to say, 2 or 3. And I actually called my mom to come pick me up because I was so scared.
Oh, that is adorable.
Both of like the movie, but just like it felt just like, it felt like watching my friends play with a loaded gun. I was like, guys, we are not supposed to be doing this. This is terrifying.
I was the same way, man. I've told the story before, but my first R-rated movie was Escape from New York. And there was a little church youth group get together and that movie was coming on. And I went out of the room and I called my mom and asked if I could watch it. And she said, because you called, you can watch it. And I really appreciate that. And you know, she didn't know she had the best son in the world at the time.
I went, the first one I saw in the theater, first R-rated movie I saw in the theater was Terminator 2 Judgment Day.
Oh, yeah.
But I told my mom that I was going to see a showing of The American President, which should have been a big fucking tip off, Mom. I mean, come on.
Totally.
I was absolutely not. And I did, so I went, I actually did buy the ticket for the I bought a ticket for both.
Really? So you could have the ticket stub?
I would have the American President ticket stub. Don't know what sort of like Columbo bullshit I thought my mom was about to pull on me, but like I did have the ticket stub for American President. Did like read a synopsis of the movie.
Did you walk in the door being like, boy, that Annette Bening, such an actor.
It was a really, you know what? I asked someone who had seen the movie. I think it was, okay, my friends, I think I went to see it with my friend Tommy Red, and I think his mom had actually seen The American President, and I asked her, like, what should I say? Uh-huh. And she said, tell her that you really liked Aaron Sorkin's dialogue. I was like, yeah. I think I probably did tell my mom that, which, like, I bet she immediately was like, so how did Eddie Furlong do in the movie Terminator 2 Judgment Day that I know that you definitely went and saw because I know exactly your whole thing.
And that just happened to be playing at the same theater, and your mom was like, come on, give me a break.
Come on, kid.
Griffin's movie, you know, was, of course, Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
Was that a big one for you too?
Oh yeah, yeah. I that's one of those that still hold. I mean, you can watch that now, still like brilliant, fantastic. It's a shame they don't make comedies for adults anymore because
I know, right?
See another one of those. But
I think Griffin's quote on that one was, "It is not only my favorite movie, but it's the best movie."
Fair, fair, sure, Griff. That's fine.
I'll let you guys tackle that at your next Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
All right. So
via Skype.
Yeah. Jesus, man. How depressing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway. And you're still in West Virginia too, right? You didn't
indeed,
move, right?
Yeah.
I love that you stayed there, man. That's great.
I like it here. I know where all the restaurants are.
Yeah. And, you know, everyone sort of moved away a little bit, but aside from Travis's brief stint in LA, no one sought sort of, you know, the bright lights of the big city.
Yeah, Trav did LA for a while. It wasn't really his thing. Yeah. I think when the podcast first started to catch on, I think we all had delusions that it was going to catapult us to, you know, superstardom, which obviously has not materialized, at least not in the world of cinema or television. But I think that it's better. I think it has made us more relatable. Like, certainly, you know, I think I love the like LA podcast scene. I think there's a lot of great shows that come out of it, but it's very sort of, I think it can feel sort of hermetic.
Yeah.
If that is the right word, you know what I mean? It's like sort of insular and very much seems of a like universe there.
Yeah, I agree.
And I feel like having a little bit more diverse backgrounds and locations and stuff like that is helpful for three of us.
I think so. I mean, this is the same with us, man. We stayed in Atlanta and never even considered going anywhere else. And then the industry sort of, I mean, you guys have been around for a long time too, but we're a couple of years ahead of you guys, but the industry grew up so much around us. You know, who needs, I mean, we did our brief failed stint in TV too, but it's kind of like, who needs that stuff? We got the best life.
Did you have to leave to shoot that, or did they shoot that in Atlanta?
We shot it in Atlanta.
I got actual film production resources there. I forgot.
Yeah, it was good. But, and the thing I missed when it didn't get renewed was, it was just so much fun. I didn't really care about being on TV, but I love being on, cause I worked on film crews for years and years before that as like a PA in art department. And like, I just like being on a film set. It's fun.
This is going to sound so dumb, but the thing that I actually like, besides like hanging out with my brothers and stuff, the thing that I really liked about making a TV show was having coworkers. I had forgotten how much I enjoyed that. And like, I grew up in newsrooms, I didn't have like a little bunk bed, but like I got my start doing like newsroom journalism, and I realized, but then I left it to do freelance video game stuff in 07, I think. So since then I had not had like people that I see every day at the office or whatever. Yeah. And it was really nice having like a big group of people that I like
totally
saw and hung out with. So that was cool, but I'm back to isolation now.
Yeah.
As are we all. Welcome to my hell.
Yeah. I think also just realizing that where we are both in podcasting is great. And like, it's a great life, and it is, I don't think I would want to be famous.
I've seen enough of it. I've been around people who are famous to enough to know that I'm sure. I mean, it obviously has its huge upsides, but for who I am as a person, I do not think it would agree to it with me. It's funny when you're trying to break into stuff, it seems like, and you're just trying to get somebody, anybody to like notice you. I sent so many letters and applications to different video game websites, like, just please hire me, please give me a chance. When you start getting noticed, it seems to you like more and more and more of that you definitely want. And then you realize that there's like a tipping point where it's like, I actually don't want more of this.
Yeah.
I have enough of this. This is good. I don't want this to be more. And I've seen people who have more, and I think it would kind of freak me out a little bit.
Yeah. Personally. I'm with you, man. It's nice once a month for someone to walk up to you in a grocery store and tell you they love what you do. And that's great. That's all I need.
Yeah, perfect.
Is validation.
It doesn't happen in Huntington because nobody listens to podcasts. I'm basically anonymous here. It's fantastic.
Oh, there's people there that are fans of yours, I'm sure. No, right?
Yes. I mean, yeah, for sure. Like, we have a college here. It's a college town. So there's, from time to time, there'll be people who, but I'm not like heralded as sort of the local hero that I would like to be.
That's my deal a little bit, is I finally got called by the University of Georgia, my alma mater, to like come back and speak to students like 6 or 8 months ago. And she was like, well, what do you say to this? And I said, where have you been?
Yes.
It's like, I've been waiting. I just want to go back to my school and be kind of a big deal. That's it.
I've been offering to like my high school journalism teacher, like, you know, podcasting sort of a big deal if you want me to come.
Right. Yeah.
Very embarrassing.
All right. Well, let's dive into With Nail and I, the 1987 film written and directed by Bruce Robinson. I know you actually put forth Wayne's World as your favorite movie, and you were kind enough. I've done enough of those kind of silly comedies to where it's not the best conversation for this show. I would have done it, and of course we would have had a good conversation no matter what, but they're not the best for this medium.
Well, you know what's so funny about this, Chuck, that I did not realize until, I mean, literally moments before we started recording, I know about this movie because of Wayne's World.
Oh, from Danny?
Yes. Wayne's World 2
features
a character. It's very strange. It's like it's like a very weird cinema thing that like, I don't know of a lot of examples of this, but in Wayne's World 2, there, which I feel like people are probably more aware of, which I watched almost as much as I watched Wayne's World 1. I mean, a bajillion times. There's this character who's a roadie named Dell, and he's very, you know, he's obviously like kind of drugged out and very weirdly serene, and but also a little bit scary and intimidating. And like, he's a great, it seems like this great, amazing, like one-off character. And then I was reading something about Wayne's World. It's like, this is a character called Danny, who is a drug dealer in a movie called With Dale and I. And it's not like it's similar. It is the same character,
the same guy.
Named something different in a completely unrelated cinematic universe. It is so strange. But yes, the Danny, and this was also filmed, you know, a good 15-ish, 10, 15 years before Wayne's World.
Yeah.
So, like, it's just the same guy again in the movie, which I'm sure, like, Mike Myers saw that movie and was like, hey, can you just, or somebody saw that movie and was like, hey, can you just do this again? If you could just do that character again.
They should have named him Danny. And
be so good.
The other little Easter egg that I'm sure you probably know about is Alien 3. Did you know about this?
I don't think so.
All right. So Alien 3 was Fincher's run at Alien, and he wanted a reunion of this cast, and he couldn't get Richard E. Grant, but Paul McGann and Richard Griffiths, I'm sorry, and Ralph Brown, who played Danny, are both in Alien 3, and Richard E. Grant turned it down. And he was, it was also another homage, because this movie is one of those that, I mean, they call it a cult film, but it's I think more than that. It's sort of this cultural touchstone to so many English people for sure, but even Americans and other filmmakers and writers.
It's okay. So things I like, without getting more into trivia, because it's like, whatever. Things I like about With Neil and I are, my wife and I watched it as a result of this, and talk about like a movie that you can like vibe on to you. Like it has such a distinct vibe, this movie, that is, it feels weird. It feels out of time, sort of. It's a movie filmed in the mid-80s that's set in at the very end of the 60s.
But it doesn't even feel like the late 60s that much.
No, it's well, it's very low budget, so there's not like a lot of like set decoration and stuff like that that they've done to make it feel, you know, of a period. It is very subdued. There's not a lot going on in it.
Yeah.
And from a like from a story perspective, like there's not much plot. It's about two unemployed actors that go on holiday by mistake. I mean, that is literally the entire bit. And there's not much story to be told. It's just very much about the vibe that of the world that they're in. It's bizarre.
Yeah, and what hit me watching this last night was, and first of all, I saw this in college when I worked at the cool video store that had all the cool indie movies. Then I've seen it twice since before last night, each time with one of my good friends from England. One of my oldest friends from college, still one of my best friends, Justin. We watched it together, and then when I lived in L.A., I had a very good friend named Guy Forgard, and it was one of his favorite movies, and we watched it together. But watching it last night, it really hit me of what a corny, hokey movie this could have been. Like, like two unemployed actors go on a mistaken vacation to the English countryside, and zaniness ensues, which is exactly what happens. But there's nothing about this that's hokey or corny. It's so real.
Well, it's very grounded. It's like, if you look at these guys, so these guys start off in absolutely deplorable circumstances. There's Withnail, who is like very overly dramatic and cruel and cowardly and crappy. And then there's he doesn't get named, who's Paul McGann, who was the eighth doctor. Just them living in deplorable circumstances. They're drugged out of their minds. They are living in, like, it feels claustrophobic. It's so fully realized that, like, you feel like, I want you guys to get out too. This seems miserable.
Yeah.
But when they go one of their friends with Nail has an Uncle Monty who has a house in the countryside. So the two of them go there. And, like, from the moment they get there, it's so ground. It's like, the whole movie is like this, but like for example, when they show up at the cottage, they don't have fire. They didn't bring anything to start a fire with.
Or food,
they
really.
They have no food. Yeah. They don't have boots, so they have wrapped their feet in plastic to protect from the weather. And it's like, that is not something that a comedy like this would normally concern itself with. But those small, even the small details like that, their desperation and ineptitude, like, each thing feels momentous. They at one point are at a bar and they see a poacher come in who has an eel that he takes out in his pants, that he whacks the head of the eel on the bar till it dies, and then he puts the eel down in his pants, and then they come over and there's a scene of them, like, trying to talk him out of giving them the eel that he has stuffed down his pants. And, like, every scene is like that, of, like, these very small, banal circumstances being elevated just by their, like, absolute ineptitude at navigating life. I think, like a lot of great comedies, it is also undercut with a real sadness.
Yeah, big time.
That it is very much about the end of this era.
Yeah.
It is very much about the end of the 60s and, like, the reckoning that would come. It is very much about I think they even talk about, like, how the 70s are going to be a massive hangover from the 60s. And that is very much what you see buildings, like, as they're driving out to the countryside, there's a couple of shots of buildings being, like, demolished.
Yeah, totally.
It's all very gray and washed out. And, like, it feels that way. It feels like they're eulogizing the 60s in a sense. Like, and these guys are kind of got caught at the end of the party, and they're a couple of the last guys still there.
Yeah.
And there's a real, like, sadness about the whole thing that I think actually makes it work better than it would without it.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, seeing this movie in my 20s and 30s, which was, I think the last time I saw this was when I was in LA, probably 15, 16 years ago. And then seeing it here at 49, I had this wave wash over me where I was like, oh my God, Withnail is a desperate alcoholic.
Yeah.
And that is the sadness, I think, seeing it through older eyes. It's very funny, and the alcohol is played as a gag so much through the movie. But when you see it as a grown adult like this, you can't help but think, oh my God, this guy's going to die young of liver disease.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes. Which is hard to separate from how funny them talking about meeting. One of his best lines is the movie is, like, infinitely quotable.
Oh, yeah.
If you've seen it,
I've got a bunch of
my
them.
Wife and I have been doing it for years. But at one point, Withnail is standing. He has covered his body in what appears to be icy hot to keep him warm because they have no heat.
Yeah, I know.
And he's
line.
Covered his entire body in icy hot. It's a fantastic gag because he has slathered every inch of himself in icy hot. Uh-huh. And then he says there wasn't much in the tube. There's none left for you.
Yeah.
Throws it to him, which obviously he had bathed himself with it already, but he's standing there and he's shouting about how badly he needs a drink. And he just screams, I demand to have some booze. Yeah. And it's my wife and I have been doing that to each other. Like when life demands it, like, just out of nowhere, Sydney, I demand to have some booze.
Well, and there's the other great line in the end about the finest wines.
I'll have the finest wines known to humanity.
I demand it.
We want them here and we want them now.
I mean, we'll definitely go through some of these lines. One of them is when early on in the film is when they're you know, there are these two out of work actors. And one of the things they do is go down to the labor exchange when they're not working. And I guess that's their filing for unemployment or whatever between jobs. And he says that everyone's doing it. And Withnail goes, I haven't seen Gilga down at the labor exchange. And then he takes this brief beat and very desperately, he says, why doesn't he retire? I mean, Richard E. Grant is so great in this. It's his first movie, and it's just like, I mean, for this to be your first role is just like revelatory, you know? It's just such a performance.
Yeah, it's so iconic. It's so iconic. I was trying to think of the other you were talking about.
It's like Greenland in here.
Where did you get soup? I want any soup.
He's eating coffee with a spoon.
We mentioned Uncle Mondi, and I did want to talk about that a little bit because it is an interesting, I mean, talk about things you don't realize, as like tastes and awareness of things continues to evolve. We see there's a big plot point that, and basically, what you come to learn is that Uncle Monty is gay, and it is very heavily implied that Withnail has promised that if he lets them use his cabin, that who's apparently, as Googling, I found out his name is Peter. Well, I'm going to refer to him as Peter because that's much easier.
Well, Marwood is another. I think in the script he's Marwood.
Marwood, yeah, Peter Marwood. Peter's is also secretly gay and would, you know, have a romp with him.
Right.
And there is a and basically this time period, much more closeted, much more taboo.
Sure.
And Uncle Monty comes, who's Richard Griffiths, who you'll know is Mr. Dursley, Harry Potter's adopted dad.
Yeah, he's great in this.
You know, the uncle. And he's fantastic. And there's a scene where Uncle Monty, he has come to the cottage and he is helping them to, get a little bit more settled. He's been very kindly, but also kind of obviously has designs on Peter. And there's a scene where against Peter's wishes, Uncle Monty like comes upstairs and basically like attempts to force himself on to Peter, and it is like a very troubling scene. It's a very disturbing scene.
Yeah. It's played like a horror movie almost.
It is, but and obviously I'm a straight guy. I my read on this may be completely wrong. This is just as I've watched it repeatedly and through different lenses as I've gotten older, my most recent take on it is like, in a lesser movie, it would be a comedy. In a lesser movie, it would be, I mean, in a lesser movie from like now. I mean, you know, like this time period, the idea of a closeted gay dude attempting to, you know, have his way with a straight guy.
It's like the scene from Wedding Crashers.
Yeah.
The Vince Vaughn scene.
Yeah. Okay, good. Yeah, that's a really good comparison, right? But this movie, I think both through like direction and writing, but also through Richard Griffith's performance is absolutely like astonishingly good in this movie. He is out of control good. He imbues it with a sadness and a desperation of somebody who basically lived a lie his entire life and is just now sort of, you know, realizing that that's not going to be his life. And Monty is not given a chance to, we're not seeing him forgiven in terms of the movie. We don't see him. He doesn't like make it up to anybody, but the movie doesn't also try to excuse his behavior. He just disappears from the movie at this point.
Yeah.
But it's really like, it feels more like a commentary. And maybe this is overly generous again, but it feels more like a commentary on what society did to gay people at that point by making them hide their existence.
I think it totally was. I mean, this was set in 1969 and the character of Monty is in his 60s, easy. So this is a gay man in England who grew up from the turn of the century where it was literally illegal and you could be chemically castrated. And that letter that he leaves the next day when he's out of there is just so sad and tragic, you know?
Yeah, it's very sad. Fun trivia for you, Richard Griffiths, had more credit to his performance. He was 40 years old when this movie was filmed.
Shut up, really?
Yeah, yeah, he was 40. It's wild. I mean, a while. Yeah, I mean, absolutely, that's the read, though. He is not meant to read as a 40-year-old dude. He's absolutely
I don't think so.
Older.
And here's another bit of trivia that I don't know if you knew, but the writer and director, Bruce Robinson, based that character on Zeffirelli, because he, as a young, very handsome actor, was in Zeffirelli's Romeo and Juliet and apparently was very much hit on and come on to by Zeffirelli. He thought inappropriately as a much older man, and even took some of the lines directly from Zeffirelli, like, "Are you a sponge or a stone?" Apparently was something Zeffirelli actually said to him.
Wow. Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I don't know how a smarter person or a gay person would feel about watching that scene. That is just sort of my read on it.
Yeah, I'm with you.
But I mean, I think it definitely feels progressive in terms of the mid to late 80s.
Yeah.
You know, he is not sort of like othered or made to be a monster because of his sexual orientation. It is because, you know, of the attempted assault of Peter. But
yeah, and that's sort of a through line through the movie. You know, there's a couple of times where there's the one time in the bar earlier on in the pub when the guy calls him a ponce, calls Marwood a ponce, and he's just terrified of getting beat up. And I think he and Withnail are it seems like they're constantly being mistaken for a gay couple.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, seeing it again and having not seen it in a while, I couldn't really remember. I kind of thought they were a gay couple, and then it sort of jogged my memory as the movie went along that they weren't. But they do sort of read that way, I think, to the locals in Camden Town.
It's a very interesting relationship the two of them have, and it's really the cornerstone of the whole movie because they're basically a unit.
It's a love story, you know?
It really is, and it's interesting because Peter obviously very much cares about Withnail and cares about his constantly like frets about his well-being, his safety, attempts to like look out for him in a lot of different ways. And I think there is an implication that Peter has a job offer that he is maybe feeling guilty about because Withnail does not also have work.
Right.
And it's interesting because Peter very much cares about Withnail. Withnail does not seem to have the capacity to care about Peter in the same way.
Or anyone.
Anyone other than himself.
Yeah.
Very self-obsessed. And I think what you do see, what he lets show through is sort of a dependence on Peter that he needs and is very much lost without. How deep do you get like plot wise on this show in terms of like trying to avoid talking about like the ending of movies?
It's all fair game.
It's interesting we're talking about the elegy for the, or a eulogy for the 60s. The very last scenes of the movie, Peter gets his job offer and cuts his hair.
Yeah.
Which is doesn't seem like a big thing, but it's a very big deal.
Yeah. Very symbolic.
Yeah, very symbolic. He's leaving Withnail behind, who I think is sort of the, if you want to overthink it, is like very symbolic of the self-indulgence of the 60s.
Yeah.
And Peter is sort of like moving on from that and letting himself be sort of absorbed into the working world or the more traditional world.
Yeah.
While Withnail is, and Withnail is kind of left by himself and has this very sad very sad final scene where he's sort of like mourning the loss of Peter. But like that sadness doesn't come out of nowhere. It's like present from the beginning of the beginning of this movie. Okay. Interesting trivia. The beginning of this movie was funded by George Harrison.
Yeah.
So they have killer music in this movie. The soundtrack of this movie is excellent.
Yeah.
And the very opening scene is this instrumental version of Whiter Shade of Pale.
So great.
It is in front of a live audience. It's like such a strange vibe.
It is.
But so clearly like says, this is what the movie is. Like, this is going to be this kind of movie.
Yeah.
So that, but that sadness is more present than the comedy. Like from, like it is both the beginning and ending of this is, it is a sad story. But I don't, does it make you sad to watch it now? Like, as, especially as you were talking about, you know, watching as an older dude.
No, it doesn't make me sad, because it's so goddamn funny.
It's really funny.
I mean, really, really, really funny. The script is so good. I mean, there is a melancholy, I think, that washes over you. And you do wonder, especially now, like I said, watching it as an older guy, like what happens after Marwood leaves? Like,
yeah.
what happens to Withnail? I don't think anything good. Which is tragic.
The character that it was based on, and this is somewhat hearsay, but the character was based on died of throat cancer in the mid-90s.
Really?
And there was perhaps due to his actually drinking lighter fluid like Withnail does in this movie. Yeah.
It's rough.
Rough chuckles there.
That was tough.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, there's so many funny moments. So like the Danny stuff, you get two great Danny sequences. That first one where he's first introduced and just that guy's voice, man. Like that guy can't say a line without me laughing.
It's so good. Yeah, he's fantastic.
And then the last one where they come back and he's basically been squatting with Presuming Ed. One of the great character names of all time.
Presuming Ed, who Danny is getting out of the drug business to start a doll company with Presuming Ed. Because Presuming Ed's niece has a doll that pees.
Right.
And Danny and Presuming Ed are going to make a doll that shits itself. And that's like that's his business. That's his business plan.
Yeah, and yet it doesn't come across as some whack. I mean, if this was some Hollywood version, it would just, that would be such a dumb joke. But it works in this movie.
This Danny line from the very end of the movie, this last scene, where this character is very out there, but he also because he is sort of unhinged a little bit, he's able to talk about thematic elements of this movie without having to ground. This is a line that I'm reading here. If you're hanging on to a rising balloon, you're presented with a difficult decision. Let go before it's too late, or hang on and keep getting higher, posing the question, how long can you keep a grip on the rope? They're selling hippie wigs in Woolworths, man. That's the greatest decade in history of mankind is over. And as Presuming Ed here has so consistently pointed out, we have failed to paint a black. It's like,
oh, dude, that is so great.
They're selling hippie wigs in Woolworths. It's like, that's the whole movie. Like, that's literally the whole movie. Like, that's the whole movie in a single line. It's wildly well written. There's not a line out of place in this entire movie.
Yeah, and they he has that carrot joint, and they earlier they challenge each other to a drug off. Basically, that's such a good scene when he brings out that pill, and Richard E. Grant's like, "Give it to me, I'll run a mile." He's like, "I can do 10 times the drugs that you can."
Oh God!
But it works. It never comes across as like some silly sort of juvenile movie. I think because of that tragic undercurrent, and like you were talking about the passage of time and the 60s dawning into the 70s, there's just so much more substance, so much more meat on the bone in this movie.
Yeah, it's we could honestly like repeat, like it would be a more entertaining podcast if we just read the script of Withnail and I, because that's literally the entire film is like that. I feel so jealous of people that have not watched this movie.
I know.
Because it is, I mean,
you get to see it for the first time.
It's so good. And you really do. A lot of the transfer and sound stuff is like not so great. I watched it on oh my God, it drove me crazy. Had my big TV there, put in the Criterion Collection DVD with Neil and I, which is one of the very few places you can like track it down. It's in 4:3.
Oh, really?
Letterboxed 4:3, right?
Oh, weird.
4:3 here, and then letterboxed top and bottom. It is wild. That's the Criterion. You told me it was on the Criterion service, right? You can get it.
You can watch it on the Criterion channel, and if you're a listener, you can sign up and get 2 weeks of that for free. I would recommend just paying for the Criterion channel because it's great, but you can get 2 weeks free, watch a bunch of movies, and cancel if you want.
Yeah,
if you want
anything you want to. still free country. Cancel.
There's something else too about a movie with two guys on the take. Like every time they can, they're trying to scam booze. Whether it's using the money from the wellies when they're supposed to go buy boots, and he goes in and he has that great scene in the bar where he goes, "We'll have to work quickly. A couple of quadruple whiskeys and another pint, please." Or every time Monty leaves the room or turns his head, Richard E. Grant or Withnail grabs that bottle of sherry, and just chugs as much as he can before he comes back into the room. It's just so funny.
The obsession with he has a Danny has invented a device that you fill with a child's urine, fill the child's urine, and then drunk drive, and then you demand a urine test when you're arrested, and you fill it with the child's piss. Which, of course, there's a fantastic payoff for later in the movie. But
absolutely,
it's really, really, really good. Again, talking about like adult comedies,
yeah,
it's sad there's not. They don't let people make these anymore.
Another one of my favorite parts is, you know, when they are at the cottage and they have no food and they're trying to get food. He goes to the neighbor, this old lady, who's basically just like, "Fuck off, get out of here," asking for eggs. And they eventually get some food through her son, who is the farmer
with the farmer,
the polythene wrapped around his leg. And he asks what's happened to his leg, and he goes, "Got a Randy Bull up there. Gave me one in the knee."
This is a very good movie. If you haven't seen it, just make sure you track it down.
I recommend subtitles too. This is the first
time. Yeah, 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 for sure.
Yeah, I watched it with subtitles last night for the first time, and there's just so much more that you get. And then there's still a lot that, as an American, flies right over my head because so much is colloquial. And that was apparently when Robinson was getting the movie made, they really wanted him to change the script to make it more broad, I think. Not comedy broad, but just they're like, you have all these sayings in here that people are not going to get because it's 60s Camden Town, London specific. Yeah. And he was like, "No, this is the movie." And he couldn't get it made. And so he got money to do it himself from George Harrison.
Yeah, weirdly. Do you know what it actually is funny? It reminds me of is The Princess Bride in that regard, because that's another 1987 movie.
Yeah.
Exact same, you know, time period as this, where it's like did not make a splash in theaters, but was released in the exact right time period.
Yeah.
Where VHS was starting to become so commonplace that everybody could like buy movies on VHS, right, and rewatch them. And there's this period of like right around this like mid to late 80s period where like movies like this start to be able to develop a cult following. You release this movie 5 years earlier maybe and no one's ever heard of it because it doesn't have the, you know, if it flops the one time in theaters, like that might be it for the movie.
Yeah,
you know, you don't have the VHS release there or rental options.
Yeah, for sure. I never really thought about that, but I think you're totally right. The other thing that stood out at me too last night was the narration in this movie. Narration can be so tricky, but it works so well in this movie because it's not, I think narration at its worst is so overly sentimental and instructive, but this is more of his sort of inner monologue and like it informs the character, but it doesn't telegraph like what's going to happen next, which is the worst kind of narration.
Yeah, it's much more about thematic laying out the thematic bounds of the movie much more than it is about like his own motivations or anything like that. It's much more about talking talking around the edges of the movie than something that sort of dictates this is how this character is feeling.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
This is Ashley Iaconetti from the Ben and Ashley I Almost Famous podcast. Tennessee just sounds perfect. Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure. To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
You've probably heard a lot about electrified vehicles lately. Well, Toyota has electrified options for every lifestyle. We've got hybrids, no plug needed.
All right, let's go.
But we also have plug-in hybrids, if that's your thing. You can even go 100% electric in the Toyota BZ4X. With so many options for reducing carbon emissions, Toyota is electrified, diversified. Learn more about our Beyond Zero vision for the future at toyota.com/beyondzero.
Before we get to the very end, because we should dissect that scene a little bit, the two more big standout laughs for me were when he sets that fucking chicken on the log in the smoker.
Yes.
Just sits him upright.
The chicken that they killed somehow. Peter says that when they're looking at the chicken, it's got dreadful beady eyes. Yeah. They stare at you. Best kill it quick before it tries to make friends with us.
It's so good, and he's such a good actor too. I think it's easy to think about Richard E. Grant's performance, as such a bravura performance. But Paul McGann is so great in this.
His desperation and fragility really sells it. Like,
yeah, he's so desperate.
There's a scene that you were talking about, the guy insulting him for being a ponce as he goes in the bathroom.
He's terrified.
He's terrified. He's like peeing in the urinal with this. He walks by the guy, doesn't even register facially when the guy's like perfumed ponce. Doesn't register, keeps a smile on his face, goes into the bathroom, absolutely has a breakdown trying to figure out what he did wrong to this guy, and then walks back out of the bathroom with the exact same expression he had walking in. This like huge face on grand, and just informs Withnail that they need to leave the bar right then.
Yeah. And of course, Withnail, with all his, you know, which fucking guy said that to me? And, you know, he turns around like he's going to fight the guy, of course, and then they bail because he's not going to fight anybody.
No, yeah. He suggested they take it outside and handle it like gentlemen. There's actually a beautiful line reading there where Richard E. Grant sees the size of the guy and says, what my acquaintance here was trying to get, like, almost says friend, stops, changes to acquaintance. Well, my acquaintance here.
He's constantly selling him down the river, like all through the whole movie. It's hysterical.
Yeah. And I think that that's like, it's very, seeing the end of that relationship, I think says a lot about both of them.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. The other big standout scene for me, comedy wise, is the tea room scene. When they go to buy the wellies, they get loaded at the pub and then go to get some cake and tea in that stuffy tea room. It's such a good scene.
Looks so good. It makes me hungry every time I see it, because I know that feeling of like, I got too drunk in the middle of the day and I need to do something right now or I'm headed for disaster.
Well, and just how proper the Brits are with everything. It's so great. What a great culture. Yeah,
Withnail announces that they are
millionaires.
Are going to make a movie. Oh, <that's laughs> they might want to film a scene there. Yeah, Peter says we're not drunks, we're multimillionaires, and then the Withnail says he wants to film a scene there, and they might film a scene there in the tea room
locations.
Yeah.
All right. So that last sequence, you know, like you mentioned earlier, Marwood gets a job. Like, there's only one way this movie can end. and that is this way. Like, they have to part.
Yeah.
They have to break up in a certain sense, and Marwood has to be the one that grows up and gets the work, and Withnail has to be the one that is left behind. It's the only way this movie can go, and he gets that haircut, and the physical transformation is just so striking against Withnail's sameness in that same ill-fitting suit with his sort of greasy hair and still trying to have that last drink and get drunk with him one last time. And he won't do it. You know, that's so like symbolic of this parting of ways. And so sad.
Yeah. Which they do without hanging a hat on it.
Yeah.
Which is so smart. Like, they don't like make a big, but you've always loved booze.
Yeah.
We drink so much booze together. How could you? You've really changed. Like,
are you just reading the script? I'm so jealous.
Yeah. The last shot of the movie, you want to talk about like having faith in yourself as like one, a screenwriter, two, a director, three, an actor.
Yeah.
The last bit of the movie is Withnail by himself
in the rain,
reciting the "What a piece of work is man" speech from Hamlet.
Yeah.
It's like
so fucking good.
It's so good, but also like, so you're going to end the movie with Hamlet.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to take a bit from Hamlet. Richard E. Grant is going to fucking, I mean, absolutely sell it. I don't know if the dude ever played Hamlet, but he should have. He's absolutely brilliant in these 20 seconds of Hamlet that he does at the end of the movie. And then that's it. It's just hit Withnail by himself. It's really, really the courage of that, like the bravado of that, like, well, we're just going to crib from Hamlet real quick at this part. And, you know, it deserves to be in our movie, and we should be in the same breath as Hamlet. It's genius. And his performance is perfect, like everybody's performances in the movie, because there's not really a lot of characters, but I think every one of them is does a fantastic job.
Yeah, and there's also that one line that kind of foreshadows earlier. I will never play the Dane.
That's true. Yeah, Uncle Monty. What is it? Such a sad moment in a young man's life when he wakes up one morning and realizes I will never play the Dane.
Yeah, and I mean, God, this movie, I just can't say enough about it. It's
oh man. So I had never connected those two, but like, that's the moment for Withnail realizing that he'll never play the Dane.
So he plays him in the rain.
Yeah.
By the zoo with those wolves behind him, behind the fence.
Oh God.
It's just such a powerhouse last scene. And I looked up the "What a Piece of Work is Man" just to get sort of Wikipedia's take. And it says this, and it's just
noted theatrical scholar, yeah, Wikipedia.
Dr. Wiki. And Dr. Wiki said, in this passage, Hamlet is expressing his melancholy to his old friends, in this case, I guess the wolves, over the difference between the best that men aspire to be and how they actually behave, and the great divide that depresses him. And that's it, man. And that's the movie.
Yeah, that's the movie. God, what a good flick.
So great.
I feel like still not as, you know, you said it's not quite a cult hit. I think that's fair. I think it has a bigger impact on people. I still don't feel it's like, I feel like it could be a lot more well known. It should be heralded as like one of the greats. Like, it is, it deserves to be in the same breath as pretty much every other comedy classic, but I feel like did never made like the American impact that you know, a lot of other movies did.
Yeah, it's on some lists in England as like a top 20 all-time film from England and stuff like that. So, I mean, it's definitely has its due as a cult hit in certain circles, though.
It ain't easy to watch either. I mean, like, thank goodness for Criterion.
I know.
Like, I've been making do with like bad VHS and DVD transfers of this movie since we started watching it.
Yeah.
Like, if you went to try to buy this right now, I think you're going to pay like $100.
Oh, really?
DVD of it is like impossible to find.
Yeah. Well, check it out on Criterion. I got a question for you too. Do you say chin chin when you toast?
Okay. This is interesting. Wow. That's so funny that you say that. my wife and I wanted to start saying it.
Uh-huh.
We couldn't figure out if it was racist or not.
Oh,
interesting.
And
we have spent many, because there's so many things that sneak up on. If you have not wondered if something is racist, it probably is. And that we're like, Chin Chin, is that like a racist thing? We Googled and Googled and Googled, could not find it, but couldn't find enough that said it's definitely not. It's one of those weird things, like the origin, I guess, is not super clear. We have not found definitive evidence that it is, but it was still, we're nervous enough people that we just have stick to Prost.
Now, Prost is super racist, dude. No.
Dang it.
Kidding. I didn't know if this was the origin or not, or if that was a common usage.
I think it's a common. I've heard other British people say it.
Okay.
I don't know if it's from this movie, but
I never knew. I've certainly had plenty of friends that said it over the years. And I always think it's a nice little shorthand for being, it's sort of like being in a little club, like if you love this movie, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It says a lot about who you
are. It's definitely what put it on the map. If it was not the originator of it, it's definitely what made it more common.
Totally. All right, dude, you got anything else on Withnail? If not, we'll finish with the quick five questions.
Wrap it up.
All right, dude. What was the first movie you saw in a theater? Are you thinking?
I am. I'm trying to. You would think I would know that offhand, but it pretty sure E.T.
Okay. That's a great first movie.
Let me see. When did that come out? Let me double check my memory there. That was 82. As long as movies stayed in theaters then, that is possible.
All right.
Yes. I'm going to go with E.T.
Okay. What was your first R-rated movie?
Well, that's funny that we've covered. My first home R-rated movie was Sleepaway Camp Part 2.
Okay.
Or possibly 3.
I didn't know if you fully watched it.
Well, I didn't get through it, so I guess no. We will give it to T2.
Okay.
We will give the honor of fully completing. Yeah, because you don't watch 10 minutes of a movie from between your fingers and say, yeah, I saw that. I saw that.
Well, some people do. Let me see. Number 3. I'm trying to find my list because I don't do these as much anymore. All right, here it is. Number 3, and people, listeners are like, dummy, you know your fucking questions. Will you walk out of a bad movie or do you stick it out?
I have walked out of one movie, Beverly Hills Ninja.
Oh, I thought you were about to say Cop.
No, Beverly Hills Ninja, I walked out of.
Was that
I
Farley? Just,
yeah. Beverly Hills Ninja, walked out of. But that is the only, by and large, no. Nowadays, like, it is so absolutely rare. Well, I mean, not nowadays in the coronavirus times, but since I've had kids, it's so rare that I'll, like, be able to get to go to a movie theater that I would probably just, no matter what, like, show static. I don't care.
No, I'm with you. Well, and I talk about this a lot with other parents. It's like, you don't take flyers on bad movies anymore. You go when you know it's a great movie.
I saw the last time I went to the movie theater, I saw someone looking at posters and then talking with someone about what to go see. And I almost had like a melt, like, are you serious? You just showed up. You're like, what's starting soon?
People do that, dude. That's a thing. I've heard other people do that.
What a luxury that must be.
Yeah, jeez. You're either independently wealthy or you're very sad.
I've planned it. It's like weeks of planning. Uh-huh. And I've built my schedule around going to see this flick.
Yeah. Number 4, I used to ask guilty pleasure, but now I'm more akin to ask if you could be, or how about this? If you and your brothers could be in any classic comedy, what movie would that be? You don't have to be the leads, but if you could place yourself in any classic comedy, you Trav and Griffin.
I think I would love if we were in a Marx Brothers movie, but the Marx Brothers were still in it.
Uh-huh.
And it was just kind of us. We were the three people were just like, this is wild. Like, we're just standing off the side. These guys are nuts. Is everybody seeing this? This is hilarious.
All right, Mark's
check
brothers.
These guys out. There were three less funny brothers that are just sort of watching from the sidelines, encouraging them, putting them up to different things.
I love it. And then finally, number 5, movie going 101. What is your, when you could go to movies, what was your routine? Where do you like to sit? What do you like to eat?
Ooh, okay. So I will buy too many snacks because I'm at the movies. Like, I'll get the big drink, I'll get some candy and some popcorn, kind of do the whole thing. I go with my kid a lot now to go see like kids type movies. Yeah. So I get like a booster seat if the theater is available. I like to be aisle.
Okay.
Like sort of center. Like if you enter on the left, house left, I'll be like center of the house, but like far left on the aisle because I like to use the bathroom at least once in every movie I've ever been in. I can't hold it that long, especially with this huge soda I'm pounding down.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
So I'll use the Run Pee app to time it out.
Do you really?
Oh, yeah, with every movie. Yeah, obsessively.
All right, I've never used that. I've heard about it. I should check that out.
It's perfect. It's, you know what you can do now? They updated it to where you can press a button when the movie starts, and then you'll get a little buzz in your pocket when it's like, hey, it's a good time to go pee. Hey, you don't even have to take your phone out of your pocket. She's like, oh,
wow,
good. I'm going to go pee right now.
That's amazing.
And then while you're peeing, you read the synopsis of the bit that you're missing. And then you go back in and people, every time. I've been married to my wife for 14 years a week ago. Every time I come back, she'll try to tell me what I miss. I was like, you do not need to tell me what I missed. The Run Pee app has informed me. I am fully caught up.
Awesome. I got to check that out. All right. Thanks, buddy. This was great.
No problem, Chuck. Thanks for having me on your program.
Of course. It's good to see you and glad everyone's doing well and hanging in there. And let's stay in better touch. How about it?
That would be great, Chuck. I don't have any friends anymore because I just sit in my house all the time.
What are your social channels?
Oh, at Justin McElroy on Twitter. That's it. Or McElroy.family is our website. So you can go there and check out all our shows.
All right. Fantastic. Thank you, Justin McElroy.
Thank you, Chuck.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This is Ashley Iaconetti from the Ben and Ashley I Almost Famous podcast. Tennessee just sounds perfect. Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure. To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
What's up, y'all? Janice Torres here.
And I'm Austin Hankwitz.
We're the hosts of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories, a podcast presented by iHeartRadio's Ruby Studios and Intuit QuickBooks. Join us as we speak with small business owners about the tools they use to turn their ideas into success.
From finding that initial spark of entrepreneurship to organizing payments and invoices, we've got you covered. So follow and listen to Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.